This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. But don't expect us to be nice or politically correct. Nothing is sacred, and the team will be finding the queer and profane wherever we can on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
Hello, and welcome to Is Nothing Sacred. It's 2 minutes past 10, and you are in the studio with me, Steph, and James. Hello, James.
Hello, Steph. Welcome back.
Welcome back. We have a bit of a secret. We weren't actually here the last 2 weeks. We just secretly made the episodes in advance and then had to pretend it was the new year when it really wasn't yet.
We did have a lot of fun laughing about that.
Great fun. Jim is still away. He is in New Zealand traipsing around, but we have a great show tonight. And as I know, thank you to Sound Museum for a great 2 hours of music. And as they did, we will as well be featuring the one and only David Bowie.
A little homage to him.
In honour of his passing today, which is very sad. And we were just saying, you know, for people of our generation, he's been there our whole lives.
It's true.
So, yeah, we can do some reminiscing. But before we do that, down to business. So, also in the studio, we have Chris Varney. Hello, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for coming on the show. So, Chris Varney is an advocate for children's rights. His advocacy began as a 16-year-old, which was not that long ago, let's be honest. He's a pretty young man, as a youth ambassador for World Vision, during which time he became active in the anti-poverty campaigning. And from there, his career has only gone up and up, working across a few different areas of advocacy. Chris is now Chief Enabling Officer of the ICAN Network, a not-for-profit organisation that provides mentoring, education, advocacy and leadership opportunities for young people with autism. So, where do we start? To start off, Chris, actually, can you tell us the story of ICAN?
First, I probably need to change that blurb about me and make that far more snappier. But, in terms of the story of ICAN, I am someone on the spectrum. So autism, for anyone who's listening that has a connection to the spectrum, it's a very broad spectrum. It's a continuum of behaviours that will range from your genius innovators, like your Bill Gates characters, to other communication requirements, people that might be nonverbal. I live with a really good mate of mine, a guy who's almost my brother. His name's Tim, and he has what newspapers would refer to as severe autism, but I would say he's just got other communication requirements. So it's a very broad continuum, and my Asperger's, which is another way of describing mild autism, is kind of in that kind of high-functioning bucket. But the story of ICAN really began for me when I was actually 5 years old. I actually have a great memory. That's one of the strengths of autism. And I remember being diagnosed, which is a bit of an odd thing to remember when you were five. Your earliest memory, everyone can kind of dream of their earliest memory, but I distinctly remember playing with blocks in front of a panel of people. And my mum tells this story. This is like 1992, and she found that whole diagnostic process really disempowering. And they said, your son's on the autism spectrum, and that means that you're probably going to have these services in your lives constantly. That means he'll be inept in these areas, and these are his challenges, and this is what the life path will look like. And really, you know, that kind of cast a very much an I can't approach to me. So ICAN began when my mum said, look, I'm not having these services part of my life at all. I'm not going to have a bar of it, which was really gutsy of her. And so she just said, look, I'll raise him my own way. I'll find a way of doing this, and he can do whatever he puts his mind to. So that was the kind of attitude, that go-getter, your classic mum who's not going to let anyone get in her way. That was where it all began.
Do you remember being five, like what you thought at the time?
I always knew as a kid it was very different. I mean, I was a 5-year-old in kindergarten when everyone else was, happily playing with Lego and, you know, on the swings outside in the playground. I was your Picasso standing doing my artwork, and I was very much in my own little world. And if you weren't a good artist, you didn't really rate. Like, if I wasn't motivated to learn more about art from knowing you, then you didn't really count to me. So I was a very self-absorbed kid, to be frank. But I do remember feeling very different. But what I was really lucky with was I did what Mum did really well, and I see lots of parents who do this really well. They bring around them a network of family friends, family members, and often, hopefully, some teachers who really champion these kids. And I think that's so important for every kid, no matter what spectrum you're on, because we're all on different types of spectrums. But I was really blessed with the mentors and champions that Mum built around me, because we were a family that we were surrounded by people who were challenged. We would look after regularly a girl who had an intellectual disability up the road. Her name is Monique, and she's the best swimmer I know. And then my grandfather, his name is Bob. He was a hilarious bloke, had the best sense of humour, but couldn't walk, couldn't talk, couldn't do anything really properly because of a series of strokes, and I ended up being his young carer. So disability was something that was just part of our lives. And so I remember feeling different, but certainly I had so much else in my life that just seemed so normal. So I remember it, but it was only later in life did I look back and go, oh, wow, I really did stick out like the thorn among the roses there, or the rose among the thorns, depending how you want to look at it.
I know there's, differing views about the autism spectrum and disability.
Yes.
About, you know, whether it was going to fall within being able to access the NDIS,
yes,
and like different
question.
People's understanding. Like, do you identify as someone with a disability? Do you think that's helpful or unhelpful? What's your view on it?
Yeah, I'm really glad you've gone here. My philosophy with this is it is such a broad spectrum. Like, whether, you know, some people are of the mind you should categorize it more so Asperger's, which isn't really a term anymore, you know, it's been brought under what this DSM-5 that, you know, the American Psychiatry Association brings out every quarter or so. I think it depends on the person and what they identify with. Personally, I don't connect personally with the term disability. I definitely walk with people with a disability, but I mean, today, as an example, like the team I work with, 80% of them are on the spectrum. Today, my colleague Max and I, we were learning how to set up one of our business streams. And I wouldn't say that Max or I connect with that word disability. Both of us are high functioning, have Asperger's. But at the same time, in our team, there are people who have really acute challenges and find being in a room, find conversation really, really difficult. And I asked my mate Tim, who lives right beside me, you know, do you connect with this? And he said, call a spade a spade. That's what it is. Don't faff around about it. Don't give me all the political correctness. Just say what it is. And I think, gosh, that was refreshing. You know, nothing like asking someone, what do you want? How do you want this talked about? So I think, like you said, you've got to ask people, what do you connect with? Because everyone will be different.
Mm. And I guess for some people, there is a sense of empowerment
yes.
with that.
Yeah.
You know, like in our community, reclaiming the word queer. Like
yeah.
saying, yeah, that's us.
Yeah,
we're
that's
weird.
Us.
Good. Who
yeah.
wants to be normal anyway?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Overrated.
Yeah, totally. Love that.
I've missed my favourite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. It's 16 minutes past 10. And we're here in the studio with Chris Varney talking about autism.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Good.
So that makes me think I now have to ask the question, like, what is great about working? Because in your organization, so for anyone who's just tuned in, Chris runs an organization called the ICANN Network, which provides education and mentoring and leadership opportunities for young people with autism. You said 80% of the people you work with have autism.
Yeah. So what that looks like is I have... So we mentor 230 young people on the spectrum, and there are about 50 young adults and professionals on the spectrum who are on our books as volunteers or team members or mentors, nine of whom that we pay on a kind of fortnightly basis as contractors. So, yeah, I'm really stoked to work with them all. I'm just really lucky. And what's amazing about them is that autism is just a focused life. Like, these people I work with are the most accepting, the most technical, the most dedicated, quirky group of people you could come across. Like, the best example I could give is our first camp that we ran was in this shocking campsite. Like, nothing was working. It was dirt cheap, and we rocked up there, and I was like, how have I managed to get 40 people to this? No heater, no lights, nothing was working. But in my, you know, because I took 40 autistics there, everyone actually was like an expert in a certain field, like with heaters from 1950 or like with light switches and old ways of doing things, that we actually managed to solve all the many problems of this campsite over the course of the weekend. And this ranger came up to me at the end. He's like, I was on call the whole time because we thought you'd have a lot of trouble. You didn't call me at all. And I was like, everyone figured things out. Like, it was, they're just, yeah, you give them a problem to solve, and if it's up their alley, they will not stop till they do it. Like, my staff and my volunteers, they can do 2 weeks of work in 2 days if you get the structures right, because they are such an obsessive, specific, focused group that nothing gets in their way if you set things up the right way. And that's what's important. Things have to be set up the right way, which, from a manager perspective, that's where I have to invest more time. So I'm often prompting a lot, and it looks like I'm micromanaging, but I'm just setting things up, and then once they're ready, they just do it, and I'm hands off.
And how have parents responded?
Yeah, great question. I have to be honest, it's been an interesting journey, this, because you get parents respond in a whole range of ways. Like, my mum was, she came from a tough love world. She was totally probably still the most terrifying woman I know. And mum was very disciplined with me, was totally tough love, didn't cut me any slack. She would have, you know, there were some accommodations in my life. Like, I was definitely a very melodramatic kid, and she just had to be a bit more patient. But she hung in there, but she definitely kept me accountable to the rules that every other kid is kept accountable to. Not every parent is as forthright as my mum was. But, I mean, mum, I was very high functioning, so you have to stack it up against that. Every parent has a different journey. But to be frank, I do see a lot of cotton wool out there. Parents are definitely the number one advocate, the number one champion behind kids on the spectrum. What parents desperately need is people who come alongside them and help them let go when they need to let go. Can I give an example?
Please,
I was interviewing someone for a job in my team. This bloke was 18 on the spectrum, and I quickly realized into the interview that both his parents were on the call. And I was like, whoa, you're an 18-year-old. Yeah. This is the real world. You know, let's stop the call. And I just had to say, look, you're wanting a good outcome here, but this isn't a good outcome.
Yeah.
Like, it's time to let go. I mean, I've worked with 230 families, and absolutely the vast majority of them, the parents have been an incredible support, because I'm definitely not your polished, I'm not your traditional disability organisation. I believe in throwing people in the deep end. I'm a total risk taker. I will just go in there and give everything a shot I can. But yeah, I've had some families that have railed against me in the beginning and gone, to be honest, I just wanted to hide in the bushes at that campsite or at that program I was running. But then when they've seen the effect that that leap of faith has done their son or daughter, they've turned around and said, how do I, you know, back you guys? So that's been really interesting.
I was wondering as well, because I used to do swim teaching back in the day.
Great.
And I did a specific training course in how to teach children on the autism spectrum in a more effective way.
Awesome.
Which I thought was very good. And it was very much, I was quite surprised. I think everyone that did it was surprised that it was done in a way that was very positive, that it was often the teacher's perhaps mistake, that they weren't being perceptive to how the child actually learns.
And I thought that was a really positive way. Yeah.
Now, obviously, a lot of your program is to do with learning and your camps
definitely.
Right through to university. So I suppose the question is, first of all, what you've your interaction with learning was, you know, as someone...
great question.
You know,
yeah.
And where, you know, perhaps experienced... differently for other people on the autism spectrum about learning and how that's really important?
Great question, James. So it's all about how you deliver instructions. And that's where a lot of people can get stuff wrong. 'Cause education is just so verbal. Like, I don't know. If you study the history, it's so bloody verbal. It's and for there are, like in my team, I mean, even today, like I'm a manager having a conversation with an employee about how things need to be done. I could tell that it's not really landing. And I'm like, I need to put this in a visual and draw arrows and colors and a flow chart. And I've become obsessed with flow charts. My weekends are spent drawing pictures. but I think to answer your question, it is about thinking of different ways to present information, and that's just some critical thinking. You become a better teacher and a better learner when you actually go, okay, I need to my learning style is text-based or written, or it's metaphors or it's visuals or it's allegories, whatever it might be. You need to think about, well, there's a broader group here. How does the information need to be presented to them? In my team, I've got two statisticians who are extraordinary. So one of them, he's my equivalent of a managing director, if you like, and he is won the top medal at Monash. His PhD is on curing yellow fever. I'm not joking. He's just we asked him, so he gave you that total, gave you a scientific rundown of what it was, and we were like, so what does that mean? He's like, I'm curing yellow fever. And it's like, right, okay. Shit, what are you doing? And then I've got another one, and she just gives presents information in data, because she's like one of the really up and coming great researcher in women's health and knows everything about breast cancer statistics. But then in my other team, I've got people who don't work with statistics at all, but are beautiful writers. So everyone is different, and in this spectrum, what is important, and I think what you've asked there, James, is the learning styles are important to work with, because it is the difference between really switching on someone's mind and missing them completely. So if we're talking, I know we've got a more informed crowd here, if we're talking from a policy perspective, it's very disappointing that we only have 19% of young Australians on the spectrum gaining a post-secondary qualification. And I would argue that it's largely because the way that we deliver education is not adaptive and diverse enough to switch on these different minds of people on the spectrum or on the broader neurodiversity spectrum. So there's a lot of university programs that are targeted to high-achieving students who might be from low socioeconomic backgrounds. There are not many university programs that are targeted to students that might have a neuron difference and whose secondary education mightn't have created the right structures to enable them. Mm. This is a massive, massive gap that no one's talking about. And it means that we do have a tiny, if you look at the ABS 2014 data, that 19% is the lowest of all the cohorts. It's really embarrassing.
Mm. You're listening to a Joycast from GLB TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred Tonight we're talking all about autism, but first we have a message. The message says, will this show be available online afterwards? Yes, is the answer. So it won't be available straight away because we don't have a magical podcasting system. We have an actual volunteer, James Rothery, who diligently does it for us every week. So hopefully that will be up online sometime in the next week or two. And it's available on the Joy website, which is joy.org.au. So you can go to joy.org.au/isnothingsacred.
And all of our previous ones are up
there. All of our previous ones, two and a bit years. Thank you, James. And you can also find us on iTunes and you can download the podcast for free and join the other 600 people who downloaded our show last month. Yeah. Yeah. Join us. Well, back to the topic. We are talking tonight with Chris Varney, who runs the ICAN Network, which is all about empowering young people with autism. And we're having a great conversation. Mm. So if you've just tuned in, before the ad break, we were talking about politics, talking about policy, talking about what can we do to, well, you know, what can the government do, what can the community sector do, what can society do to better support people with autism.
That's right. In particular, it was leading into education and how some, you know, pretty simple changes in teaching philosophy can really bring a whole lot of people on the autism spectrum along with them. And probably, I'd say,
everyone.
Argue a lot of people as well.
Can I ask perhaps a tricky question? How do young, you know, and it sounds like the experience that you had was quite different from the experience a lot of other people have had in terms of the support your family had.
Yes, it was different.
Do young people with autism tend to feel frustrated? Do they feel let down? Or do people start to internalise this idea of, oh, we can't do that and I'm better off here or I'm not going to ever get to uni? How do people feel? What's the vibe in the community?
Great question. Well, let's break it down and let's think about the young person on the spectrum. The person who tells themselves they can't do things the most is the young person on the spectrum. Now, why do they tell themselves that? They weren't born saying, I can't. And this was all brought home for me when I realized, okay, ICAN Network was worth setting up. When I heard a girl who I will call Sarah in a young carer's consultation I was doing in Darwin, and she introduced herself saying, I've got Asperger's syndrome. I guess having Asperger's means there's things I can't do. And I just thought that was the most extraordinary way of introducing yourself. She didn't know I was on the spectrum. Like, she just volunteered. Like, it'd be like saying, hi, I'm James. There's things I can't do. Like, imagine that. It was just, it's like, what put those words in your mouth? And when you break it down, the systems around these kids, and the system is just made up of people who are in different spots. So health workers, educationalists, parents who believe what they're told, who mightn't second guess in some information, the negative whispers that the parents of other kids around this person. So the whole wider system sees some behaviours that might be a little left of centre, sees this kid that might take a little bit longer to process information, because processing time is very important for people on the spectrum. That sometimes they can, you know, pick up something in an uncanny way, with uncanny speed, if they're motivated by it, and if it's up their alley. But if it's not, like, I took forever to tell the time. I don't know. I just wasn't motivated. I was like, is that important? And I've never been great with time, but I'm certainly much better at reading time. But it took me a while.
You were on time tonight.
I was on time.
Perfect.
Thank you.
You're obviously motivated.
I was really worked hard at that. Yeah. And exams, I was always on time, but never in anything else. Anyway. But it is, in terms of what we can do, the person on the spectrum is largely telling themselves they can't do things because the system is telling them that. And that's when the most, if you actually come from it from a health view, any person has the most formative years between the ages of 10 to 14. All the literature says that your sense of self, your sense of identity, your aspirations for what your career could look like, a lot of that starts to develop between the ages of 10 to 14. The big problem I see is that, again, from a policy point of view, all our investment is being backed behind early intervention, mm-hmm. which is very important. Mm-hmm. And there's been incredible work done in early intervention, but you can invest in the development and in the interventions and programs and therapies for a kid on the spectrum between 0 to 8 years, because that's early childhood, 0 to 8 years, and in particular between the ages of 0 to 5, where a lot of intervention is focused. But if you don't then back that up with support programs that ensure that the worlds around these kids are enabling between the ages of 10 to 14, you risk all your early investment actually falling short of what it could achieve. Mm. And that's, I guess, the big social problem that I've stepped into, because there is no equivalent to ICANN. There is no programs doing what I'm doing. And so that was overwhelming at first, because you're trying to educate a community who unfortunately haven't had enough people on the spectrum actually get out there and share their stories. So Australia will never have an accurate view of autism until more Australians with autism get out there and speak on Joy Radio and speak on yes. other radio shows. So at the moment, like, if you're listening, if you don't have a personal connection to autism, you've probably heard about autism through Dustin Hoffman in as Raymond Babbitt in Rain Man, and he did a marvelous job, but that's no two people on the spectrum are the same. That's one, kind of glorified, Hollywood perception of autism. It's far more complex than that. But there's a community to educate, there's teachers to educate, and that's important to do, so that we don't get a 10-year-old telling me he or she can't do things.
Absolutely. Well, I think I'd like to know after the next David Bowie song in particular what what you hope to achieve, or what you have already achieved mm-hmm. with the training camps and university level.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution.
Here's the solution.
Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred? It's 11 minutes. No, it's not. It's 14 minutes to 11. We're talking all about autism. We are here in the studio with Chris Varney.
Hi, everyone.
Who runs the ICANN Network, supporting young people with autism. And we've been talking about some of the challenges, but I think it's time for some good news stories. So, can you tell us a story about, the impact that ICANN has had?
Great. I love love
you,
talking.
You strike me as a man who likes stories.
I love stories. Yeah. Look, I do have to share my favourite one, because he doesn't know the opportunity we're going to throw him, so he's hearing it on air. I'll send him the podcast. I need to tell you about a boy named Luke. Luke is 14 years old, and Luke came to our camp, was so terrified of camp that he couldn't get out of the car. Mum came up to me with tears streaming down her face saying, I've done the wrong thing. I'm a terrible mother. I shouldn't have brought him on the camp. I think he was busting, and so he did get out of the car, and I kept finding him hiding in toilets and, just different dorms in the campsite, because he was terrified to engage with 60 people at the camp, which is scary. He doesn't know anyone. And then I come out and I'm so loud and enthusiastic and overbearing. And I'm like, oh, don't worry, we're all in the same boat. But I'm not terrified, and he is terrified, so we're not in the same boat. And he came to the next day at archery, and he's like, I don't want to be here. And so I was like, well, come on, let's try and get involved. So we tried the rock climbing, which he did, no problems, but he still didn't show much engagement. And so I asked him, well, what are you coming to Dress to Obsess as? Because we, throughout our whole mentoring program, whether in schools, universities, or the camps, or in businesses, because we've started a business program now, every person on the spectrum has their obsessions. And if you're out there and you've got someone in your life who's on the spectrum, that's the safest ground for your conversation. Get them to talk about their obsession, and they'll want to, you'll never shut them up. This boy, Luke, said, I'm coming as a bookie. And I immediately trailed into, Melbourne Cup. And he's like, no, I'm into international horse racing. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, yeah, in Japan and the UK. And I was like, right. All right. And he's like, yeah, I do a bit on social media about it. you do a bit on social media about it. Okay. He's like, oh, you know, I write for this blog called Sport is Made for Betting. And I'm like, right. And he's like, oh, I sometimes earn a bit of money for that.
He's 14.
Yeah. Turns out this guy has had like 11 million followers on Twitter.
What?
Like he's just managed to crack and because he's so good at memorizing horse racing statistics that he can, and if you think about horse racing, you break it down, there are so many statistics.
Yeah.
There's like bookies and there's, you know, trainers and there's owners and there's jockeys and there's so
times
many parts
and
of
numbers
it. Yeah, it's so intricate that he's actually stumbled upon a niche area. So he's now doing his own radio show in horse racing.
Awesome.
He's turning 15 and we're talking about giving him a mentor role. So that's the social change we see. We're giving people opportunities to grow and think, well, I'm in an environment where these people believe in me. Of course I can. There's no other option. And so that's where once you give people a chance and once you really believe in them, you know, all you need is that belief and they will grow so far. So for us, the impact, we've worked with 230 kids and young people and adults. So that goes from 8-year-olds in our primary school program. So our primary mentoring program isn't called I Can Network, it's called Imagination Clubs for kids with big imaginations. And the best part about that is at our primary schools, we've actually got this problem where because it's only delivered to groups of 10 kids, we've now got one primary school in St. Bernadette's in Ivanhoe. They've got parents who are calling up and saying, my kid's heard about the Imagination Club. It sounds cool. Can he join? And it's like the principal is now going, it's not externally known as this group for kids on the spectrum, but it's definitely getting a nice word about it. So do I open it up to what the mainstream? Can they be part of the this group? So I think that's a wonderful problem to have because we've taken special needs out of that forgotten, you know, quadrangle or cubicle on the schoolyard, and now it's, you know, we've actually made it, found a way to create a platform for these kids in the center of their school cultures. So that's been awesome to see across the primary schools. In the secondary schools, what we're now doing, because we work in 6 secondary schools, is we're now starting to train up our mentees in the secondary program to mentor younger students and primary students. So you can become an ICANN school, and that's a 3-year process with us. And it's a kind of a community development approach. You're developing the capacity of these schools so that it's a seamless mentoring program and you're constantly developing that pipeline of older students mentoring younger students, which is great fun. So we've worked with 230 families. If you're listening and you've got a kid on the spectrum in your life, the best thing to do is head to our website, ICANN.network. There's some great stories there on our social media, Facebook and Twitter, of kids that we've worked with who are now feel happier that they're on the spectrum, which I think is a great outcome because it's just about making people feel comfortable about being in their own skin. So you can learn more about how a primary school or secondary school you know can get involved in being an ICANN school. At a university level, if you're listening and you've got a son or daughter or you are struggling with university studies, if the lecturer is not getting it, you can have a think about talking to our university mentors. Our university program is entirely about connecting students on the spectrum with connecting the student union and the disability liaison unit and actually joining the dots for tertiary students. Because if you're someone with a disability in university, you are a pinball in a pinball machine being thrown around and referred to so many different groups. One classic example that ICANN at Swinburne University encountered was a student who said, you know, I need special consideration and X things in my lectures to support me. And, you know, partly for a funding reason and partly for a few other things, he was referred to 3 different areas who said, you need to talk to the other one. And it's like, well, hang on. Who's carrying the can here? And that's not an isolated example. That happens across all universities and they're big places. I understand it's hard to coordinate. I do have to give a shout out to that group. Swinburne have really been terrific to work with now and are so determined to get it right. So that the reason why they've been the leading pilot university is because their staff have done what James was talking about before, they've gone, well, what are the different instructions we need to be giving? So if you're a teacher out there, you know, Google us, talk to us, have a think about the ways that you can be doing things differently, because as soon as you just go, all right, I'm going to broaden my mind outside of the box, it's not just refreshing for your student, but it's refreshing for you.
We are nearly out of time. We've got one more question. So this has accelerated pretty fast.
You started
a couple of years ago and now got, as you said, hundreds of families.
Mm.
Where are you heading? What's your vision for 5, 10 years down the track?
Great question. I would love to see any kid or young person in Australia on the spectrum, you know, be raised in an ICANN environment where there was that ethos like I had when I was a kid. There was just no question in my mind that I could do things. I told myself I couldn't do things, but I definitely had people who just made it impossible to think that I wouldn't give things a go. So what our vision is really to create a mentoring program that really does have broad reach across this cohort and that does develop the confidence of these incredibly talented people who just need they need more space. Mm. And I think when you give them that, you know, they make the intangibles tangible.
We do have another message. Someone saying, I worked with other autistic adults a while ago. We found often what worked best was actually really good management practice for everyone else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
not
so
just
true.
Young people, but adults.
Everyone, yeah, it applies to everyone. Once you ask yourself, what does it need to look like? It's actually good for everyone. Such a good comment. Mm. Keep them coming.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hi, I'm Lily Tomlin, and you are listening to Joy 94.9.
Hello, you are on Joy 94.9. It's nearly the end of the show. We've had a great chat tonight with Chris Varney. He's been so good that we've kept him the whole hour. So thanks so much for sticking around with us, Chris. If you want to find out more about the ICANN Network, check out their website or Facebook page, Twitter, get in contact if you are a person on the autism spectrum or have a family member or just find
out. Any connection, yeah.
Any connection. That's pretty much everyone in the whole country.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear a little bit more of, now I'm just looking at David Bowie here.
Not David Bowie.
If you do want to have another look at Chris as well, the very passionate Chris, you can have a look at his TED Talk, which I had a look at before the show.
We'll put it on our Facebook page.
We will.
Or you can have a look if you put in TED Talk and Chris Varney. That's V-A-R-N-E-Y. So we're running out of time, so we'd better quickly play a little bit more David Bowie.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you want to introduce this last one?
Oh, I love this. We Can Be Heroes. So appropriate to end. Wow.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.